Good morning. This meeting of the House Education Committee will come to order. Today is Monday, March 5th, 2018, and the time is 8:03 a.m. Members of House Education present are Vice Chair Representative Justin Parrish, Representative Jennifer Johnston, Representative Dave Tallarico, and myself, Representative Harriet Drummond. Representative Kopp and Representative Sponholz are excused. We have a quorum to conduct business. You know the drill about cell phones. And today our recording secretary is Sandy Edwardson, and Madison Truitt is our LIO moderator. Thank you both for helping us put this meeting on. Today we have one bill on the agenda, House Bill 221, Workforce and Ed-Related Statistics Program. I would like to invite my aide, George Ascott, and Stephanie Butler, Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education, to please come forward and explain the bill. And they will be followed by invited testimony.
Hello and good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is George Ascott, staff to Representative Harriet Drummond, and with me is Stephanie Butler, Executive Director for the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education. We're here to present HB 221, Workforce and Ed-Related Statistics Program. HB 221 will help Alaska prepare to best allocate and utilize increasingly scarce resources available for education and workforce training by clarifying the authority of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education to receive and analyze existing data from state entities through a statewide workforce and education-related statistics program. This system, currently known as the Outcomes Database, will be known as the Statewide Longitudinal Data System. I will first provide an explanation of what actual changes will occur to state law under HB 221, and then Stephanie Butler will follow up with an explanation of how these changes can ultimately help policymakers allocate increasingly scarce resources to make the most difference for students in the economy. So in your bill packet, the first thing is a copy of the bill. And I'll just take you quickly. There's five sections. So section one, which goes into the third page, is almost all existing legislation. But what this section does is that currently the commission is allowed to adopt regulations to administer financial aid programs for institutional authorization functions and interstate compacts, including the collection and confidentiality of data. This section of the bill, the new language creates additional authority for the commission to adopt regulations. And these are regulations relating to the collection analysis of K-12 data as approved by the Department of Education and Early Development under its current authority to collect that information. And it adds regulations for a new purpose, which is administering a statewide workforce and education-related statistics program. Section 2, which starts on page 3, is all new language. Currently, law allows the commission to collect data and share it with the governor, the legislature, and other state and federal agencies, but they don't have clear authority to maintain and analyze the data. So this section changes the law so that the commission can maintain a database for the purposes of administering a statewide workforce and education-related statistics program and enter into cooperative agreements regarding education and employment and employment with other agencies. It adds a section that requires the commission to remove personally identifiable information before it is entered into the database, and it may not provide personally identifiable information to the federal government. It also clarifies that a unit record is information pertaining to an individual person. Then moving on to section 3 on the same page, this is also new language that is added. Currently, the Department of Labor and Workforce Development is not allowed to share data regarding unemployment insurance with other agencies. Section 3 of this bill changes the law to permit the Department of Labor and Workforce Development to share such data for the purposes of the statewide workforce and education-related statistics program as permitted in federal regulation and contingent upon a written agreement with the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. Section 4 on the final page simply makes it clear that they can obtain data from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development that was compiled before the effective date of HB 221, and Section 5 is an immediate effective date for on the passage of the bill. And with that, I will turn the microphone over to Stephanie Butler, who will be joined by Carrie Thomas, Operations Director at the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Ascott. Right. Good morning, Ms. Butler. How are you?
Good morning. And thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Ascott. For the record, my name is Stephanie Butler, and I'm the Executive Director at ACPE, and with me is Carrie Thomas, our Operations Director. A little background information. Our mission at ACPE is to provide Alaska's citizens with tools and resources to gain access to and to experience success in higher education, both college and career training. Some of the ways that we meet that mission are by managing the Alaska Performance Scholarship and the Alaska Education Grant Programs, or the APS and AEG, offering low-cost student loans and providing a number of planning programs, among other activities. But are these the most effective ways to increase access and success? In this time of severely constrained resources, are we using those increasingly limited resources in ways that produce the best return for our students and for the Alaska public to whom we are responsible? What is the return on investment in programs like the APS and AEG? Or how about that old one, loan forgiveness? The things that we can easily measure, like the number of program participants or even the number of program completers, cannot answer that return on public investment question. To answer that ROI question, we need to know the long-term outcomes across different public sectors. For example, Alaska spends approximately $5 million annually on Alaska grant program awards. Do recipients graduate at higher rates than non-recipients? Does the program help recipients enter the workforce sooner than similarly situated non-recipients? Do they earn more once they reach the workforce? Or back to forgivable loans. If we had a cross-sector database back then, we could know, did students who took forgivable loans complete their degrees and return to Alaska at higher rates than other students? And did they work in Alaska? In other words, are we spending public money in smart ways that make the most difference for students and for the Alaska economy? The university and the Department of Education indicate they want to answer similar questions about their programs. The challenge to answering questions like this is not that we don't have the data. We do have it. The challenge is that the data is currently housed in separate transactional databases. Each time we have a question like this about long-term outcomes, we have to put together a data sharing MOU, extract the relevant data from our various systems, match it, link it up, and then get answers to our questions. And in accordance with federal law, once we have those answers to our questions, we have to destroy the linked data to protect individual privacy, which means that if we have a follow-up question, we have to start the whole process again. HB 221 streamlines this process by allowing the Department of Labor to share unit-level employment and wage records with the outcomes database, which is currently housed at ACPE. This database houses linked information from ACPE, from UA, from DEED, and from Labor, but right now it's only training and GED data from labor. With HB 221, it would also house employment and wage record data to know workforce outcomes. Once the data is linked, personally identifiable information, or PII, is stripped off, and that PII is never stored with the linked data. What this outcomes database offers us is a faster, more cost-efficient way to do longitudinal outcomes assessments, and a key part of that is minimizing the proliferation of personally identifiable data. Also, it allows us to retain the de-identified linked data so we can respond to follow-up questions or efficiently perform future analyses. As previously noted, Alaska currently spends more than $2 billion annually on our K-12 post-secondary and workforce training, but we don't currently have a database that can fully provide efficient, cost-effective, and secure feedback to the legislature and to the administration on the value received from those public investments. HB 221 enhances Alaska's ability to provide that feedback in several ways. It allows the Department of Labor to provide us unit-level employment and wage data to the outcomes database for longitudinal analysis, something 28 states already do. It prohibits the sharing of any unit-level data from the outcomes database with the federal government. It codifies in law that the database must be de-identified and sets out exactly what that means, and it clarifies ACPE's authority to maintain longitudinal data of this nature. HB 221 does not commit any funding for these purposes. It simply allows for the inclusion of this important additional data in the outcomes longitudinal database, which was created a few years ago under a federal grant. Specific to funding, it's our intent to seek resources, potentially through another federal grant, to provide outcomes reports once this additional data is available in the outcomes database. In this time of such severely constrained resources, we believe there's a significant opportunity to attract grant dollars to the project, recognizing that tough budget times makes it even more important than ever that policymakers be able to access the cross-sector data needed to look at what happens to students in our education and in our workforce pipeline, and to what extent they either enter or advance in the Alaska workforce and contribute to the Alaska economy over the long term. I don't want to give you the wrong impression that we'll be able to immediately produce lots of reports and outcomes analyses upon passage of HB 221, since we will require funding to use the data and to do those analyses. However, HB 221 does get us a step closer, and a very important step closer, and a step without additional cost to being able to provide you with those kinds of outcomes analyses. I'd note that a good example of the kind of outcomes analysis we'd be able to produce is the annual APS outcomes report. This report was required in law when the APS was created, and it's time-consuming and quite costly to prepare, but it's part of our budget each year. The long-term goal here is to be able to have the ability to quickly and easily and inexpensively produce reports like the APS outcomes report to look at other programs, including K-12 programs, as well as collegiate and career education and training programs, and to provide you with the information to know not just how much the program costs, but what the return is on that cost investment. Included in the information that Mr. Ascott provided is a list of links to reports from other states to give you some examples of the types of outcomes reports that can be created using this cross-sector information. So with that, thank you very much for the opportunity to present this information. I hope it's been useful, and Ms. Thomas and I would be happy to respond to any questions.
All right, great. Representative Johnson, you have question number one.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. So this has a zero fiscal note, and I guess the first thing is redacting individuals, and you don't see a is there a cost to that?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Johnston. There was a cost to doing that. Under the federal grant that we received a few years ago, the database was created, including the process for redacting all of that information, and also including the process for accepting the unit-level Department of Labor information. However, state law prohibited the Department of Labor from sharing that with other state agencies.
So it's been done.
It's been done.
And follow-up?
Yes, go ahead, Representative.
So, and as far as going for further federal grants, are you looking at your savings that you're going to be, as far as getting this going forward, the savings in your reports, as your matching grants for federal, or do you feel you need matching grants? Because I do see that there could be a huge savings because your queries are going to be very simple, or could be simple.
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, thank you. What we're hoping to get is a federal grant from the Institute of Educational Sciences that does not require matching funds, but in the event that we were to secure a grant that did require matching funds, some of the existing reporting that we do in the old-fashioned way, such as the APS report, those costs could be used for match.
Just one further follow-up.
Go ahead.
So the application for the grant, what exactly would that be? What would you be looking for from the federal grant?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, We've actually been encouraged by the Institute for Educational Sciences that provided the first grant to apply for a second grant. Grants are being made available to actually use the data that is in the databases created under the first grant. Our goal would be to produce a number of key, really valuable reports for legislators and for the administration, and then to seek further funding beyond that based on just the value of those reports.
So what you're looking for is with the grant is how best to use the data? Is that?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Johnson. The ability to demonstrate how valuable the data is when it's applied in analyzing outcomes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Additional questions? I have a couple myself. For Ms. Butler, how exactly would the unemployment insurance data be utilized in this program should the bill pass, particularly since unemployment insurance data is confidential?
Thank you, Representative Drummond. The information would be used at the aggregate level rather than at the individual level. So we would be able, for example, to look at everybody who participated in Program X, let's say the education grant, and then look down the line and see are these folks who completed that program in the workforce, and are they earning wages at a different rate from people who didn't complete the program, always at an aggregate level, so we're not tracking individuals. We're simply tracking the outcomes of the programs.
Oh, great. Okay. And then that applies to wage information as well. And the wage information currently is not you're not able to get that from the Department of Labor?
That is correct, Madam Chair. Currently, state law prohibits the Department of Labor from sharing that information.
Okay. All right. Representative Parrish, go ahead.
Madam Chair, looking at the handout we have in our packets here, snapshot, statewide longitudinal data systems, mm-hmm. shows that all 50 states have the ability to connect data between systems, and 47 states, as well as D.C., received federal statewide longitudinal data systems grants. So I like our odds of getting a grant. But what is a P20W system?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, isn't that an absurd abbreviation? It's preschool through grade 20 or college degree completion.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
And the W, workforce.
Workforce.
Okay.
Thank you.
Either or. Okay. Any further questions, Mr. Parrish?
No, thank you.
At this time. Okay. How about, let's see, on the document, the next to the last document in our packets, titled the Outcomes Database, there's something mentioned, Administrative Order 261, that Alaska's, what do we call that, Ms. Butler, SLEDS? Can we call it SLEDS?
Yes, Madam Chair.
No, to make
make it simple.
Saying all those big long words easier. Alaska's SLEDS was created in accordance with Administrative Order 261. What was or is Administrative Order 261?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Administrative Order 261 was issued by then-Governor Parnell, directing the Commission on Post-Secondary Education, the Departments of Education and the Departments of Labor and the University of Alaska to share data to the extent allowed under the law in order to perform these kinds of outcomes analyses. And Admin Order 261 also created a governance body consisting of the president of the university, the commissioners of education and labor, and the executive director of ACPE to ensure that the data in the database is used appropriately and cost efficiently.
Okay, great. And so the data that currently exists in the database that ACP is keeping warm was collected and first put in the database under Administrative Order 261.
Yes, Madam Chair, that is correct.
So that was, according to the snapshot, that was by this system was created by executive order, and is now we're seeking to modify it legislatively. Is my assumption.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Okay, great. Let's see. Mr. Parrish, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Look at this same section. It says that in 2016, amendment to the budget bill prevented the use of federal receipts for answers in 2017. That was the, it seems like the analogous program. What do you recall that the reason given for turning down federal money was?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, we were at that time going to seek a federal grant in order to use the data, and there were concerns from the legislator who introduced the amendment that the protection of individual student data was in question.
Paula? Go ahead.
Do you believe that that concern has been substantially dealt with? And can you speak to it?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Parrish. We believe that the data in the outcomes database is extraordinarily secure. The PII, or the personally identifiable information, is stripped before the linked data is loaded. It is also encrypted once it's loaded, and it is stored in the state's secure data warehouse, or state secure data center, where most of the transactional data that it's based on is already stored. So we believe it really is extraordinarily secure.
Thank you.
So the unidentifiable data, even though it's stored in the same vicinity as the transactional data, it cannot be relinked because of the individual identifiers that have been stripped from it.
Madam Chair, that is correct. We're very careful that they're actually stored on separate servers, the design of the process was specifically to inhibit the ability to relink.
Okay. And I have one more question. If the outcomes database is not currently collecting new data, how will it remain relevant in the future? And will it someday collect new data in addition to what's already covered?
Madam Chair, two responses there. We are able to do look-back information using the existing data. One of the pieces of information that school districts in particular have expressed interest in is to look at the graduates from a specific district 4 years or 6 years down the line and see where they are in terms of higher education and career preparation. Also, relative to your second question, the goal is under a federal grant, we would be able to provide resources to the partners who provide data to the outcomes database so that they are able to update their data on a regular basis.
So it's not so, the data is not so, I'm trying to find the right word. You still have district level data. So you can say the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District data is identifiable, but not to the individual or to the school level.
Madam Chair, that is correct. And relative to the districts, a good example is of reporting at the district level would be the APS outcomes report. If you looked at that and looked at the reports by district, you probably noticed and may have experienced some frustration that some of the smaller districts, all of the information is asterisked out. So if we're reporting at a level where the number of individuals is so small, excuse me, that an individual in that district may be able to figure out who it is, that information is not reportable.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think we had that problem with No Child Left Behind data as well. I recall how frustrating that was in terms of understanding how particular groups of students are doing. Okay. All right. Any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you all of you so much for educating us on this today. I think it's fascinating, I probably have some more questions when we come back for public testimony, and I would hope that you would be available at that time.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. We will now move on to invited testimony. Let's see. On the phone, we have Doug Walrath in Nome. Mr. Walrath, are you with us?
I am with you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Education Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Doug Walrath. I'm the director of the Northwestern Alaska Career and Technical Center in Nome, also known as NACTEC. NACTEC is a regional training center with a primary student population served from the 15 villages of Bering Strait School District surrounding Nome, as well as Nome Public Schools. NACTEC delivers over 25 unique vocational training programs annually in a variable term format to communities that would otherwise be without the diversity of programs delivered in a short duration intensive format. So I'd like to take this opportunity to testify with regard to administering a statewide workforce and education related statistics program, speaking to just, you know, what we see at our level dealing with high school students. As a regional training center, it's not uncommon to report on placement into employment with outcome measures 7 to 12 months following training. For programs serving primarily high school students, such measures neglect to account for the impact of training on keeping students engaged and in school. 75% to 80% of our high school training population annually is enrolled in the 9th, 10th, and 11th grade. Employment measures 7 to 12 months after training can unintentionally disregard three-quarters of a training population and present a skewed view of the success of training. Across rural Alaska, dropout rates tend to track disproportionately higher, just as graduation rates tend to track disproportionately lower. A measure of persistence would shed light on the value of programs that are keeping students engaged and on a path to graduation. House Bill 221 presents a tool for measurement purposes through the K-12 years, tracking to post-secondary and thereafter to employment. Now, this would be of value to determine how a coherent sequence of vocational courses can begin, as we do here at junior high career exploration level, leading to certificated career immersion courses by the 12th grade, leading either directly into employment or as the linkage to post-secondary continuation. Here at NACTEC, we would find value in longitudinal measures that HB 221 would present the opportunity to capture. For the purpose of student protection, a tool that protects personally identifiable information while using aggregate comparisons would certainly be of value. House Bill 221 proposes to do this and could provide outcome measures of enhanced value over some of the currently applied outcome measures. So I take the opportunity just to speak briefly to what those impacts could be. As a regional training center serving students for 15 years now, it's one of the things that, you know, we would find value ourselves as a longitudinal study to see what the impact of training is on the students that we see from this region, and I think would be of value to the state for regional training centers such of our own that have been doing this for 15 years to see what that impact likewise could be in other regions. So with that, that concludes my statements. I thank you for the opportunity and certainly would answer any questions if there are any directed toward me.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Walrath. First, I would love it if you could send me your testimony, email it to my office, and we'll make sure that members have it. Second, any questions for Mr. Walrath? I have a question. I heard you when you came and visited me last year and wrote myself a big note, and I said, it says, Mr. Walrath says we need the longitudinal data systems in order to track what our students are doing. How would your program be impacted by the size of the student populations, as we spoke about a few minutes ago, in terms of the smallest groups of students? I believe that's under 5 students. The data appears as an asterisk. Would your students be able to be grouped in, across the villages in groups of more than 5, so that you could actually track the data for that particular program?
Madam Chair, I believe it could be used in many different ways. Often we'll get questions about a select training program. So if we look at a certified nurse assistant program, our training population there is probably the smallest of any. We have a combined program with 12th grade students graduating and adults, and the entire class is a maximum of 6. So our student population is typically a maximum of 3 within any given year. However, when looking at, successful outcomes of a training program, typically that 1-year snapshot isn't as accurate as what the trend over a number of years would be. Our population, we have the data on a computer that I track pretty much on an updated basis throughout the year that could pull the amount of trainees per village. But I guess it would all depend on what that measure is. If it's looking at a select training program or a track or just an aggregate of students per community. But by and large, for the most part, I would think that most measures would be above that number of 5.
Okay, that's good to hear. And also I heard you say that you're tracking some data yourself right now because it's that important to you. That must take a significant amount of your time.
Madam Chair, it's part of our process that as students enroll, we have on site a FileMaker Pro database that we immediately bring all students in, and it's a rather easy process. We have a group of junior high students that are beginning today, so as the students come in, the entry of that information in junior high, which is just resides right in our office and is protected in that format. Year after year, we just add the training program a student completes and then any certificates that they attain, so that driver education, for example, is important in our region, and a student getting their state ID is one step in the process to getting their permit is the next step in the process to getting their license. So that if we see a student and then 2 or 3 years pass and they say, I want to come back for driver's education and I had a permit at one point, we can go back and access that data. And then just a separate strand is used for recruitment purposes, so we can quickly get information out to our principals to let them know how many students from their community are being served at the junior high and high school level, noting that the importance of vocational education plays in keeping students engaged and in school.
Okay, great. Any questions for Mr. Walrath besides for myself? All right, very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Walrath, for testifying this morning. Ms. Thomas, did you have testimony as well? I have you listed here as just testimony. Okay, thank you. If there's no additional discussion on House Bill 221 at this time, I'm going to hold this bill, and we will have, I think we're going to try to do public testimony next meeting. The next House Education meeting will be Wednesday, March 7th at 8 a.m., when we hope to bring back House Bill 339, increase the base student allocation. And with that, we are adjourned at 8:37 a.m. Thank you.